Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here for another episode. And this episode, we're having a really important conversation. We're having a conversation about keeping your customers. We want to make sure that your patients are long-term patients, they're loyal patients, and of course, when we achieve all of that, we've got sustainable growth in the practice. You know, week in, week out, month in, month out, the practice is growing. Now, my guest today is Ali Cudby, and Ali is the author of a book called Keep Your Customers, and that book is a best-selling book, and I'd really encourage you to get your hands on it. It's laden with really good pearls of wisdom. Now, in her time outside of writing, Ali runs a wonderful business called AlignmentForGrowth.com, and I love the fact that it's got the word mint in there because it obviously has that nice dental connotation. And when she's not running that business, she's also the professor of entrepreneurship at Purdue University. So what I really love about what Ali brings to this conversation is she brings data, she brings research, and she brings real-world experience. So this is a beautiful blend of data and experience, you know, qualitative and quantitative conversation. And in our conversation today, we did talk a lot about how to engineer a customer experience, how to have the heart and the smart component of that customer experience. In other words, how to systemize something, but make sure we humanize it as well. We spoke about the value of understanding patient retention. Clearly, that's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, but we spoke about the numbers, what it means, you know, what happens if you've got a churn rate of X, where are we going to end up? How does that impact patient experience? How does that impact the growth of the business? So lots and lots of things that we talk about in this conversation. It's a really wide-ranging conversation, and as I said, what I appreciate that Ali brings to this so much is the hard-nosed research as well as the real-world experience in running a business. So in this episode, there's a ton of gold. This episode is literally laden with pearls of wisdom, nuggets of gold, things that you can take away immediately and apply into your practice. So do have a pen and paper handy, but most importantly, as you record those notes, think about how you're going to apply this in your practice, because I guarantee you that if you do apply this information in your practice, it is going to skyrocket your growth. It's going to make sure you are on that path to growth, and it's going to make sure you've got a sustainable business. So no matter what happens in the economy, no matter what happens with any particular, you know, social media platforms or digital algorithms or anything of that nature, you are going to be safe and sound, and your practice is going to be, you know, chugging along no matter what. So please do take some notes. Please do act upon those notes. And without any further ado, here's Ali Cudby. Ali Cudby, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here. How are things for you today?
Things are excellent in the United States. Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's actually evening for you. So thank you for taking the time out of your nighttime to come and talk to us in our daytime. Can't wait to get into it. You've got an incredibly interesting biography and your background is really rich and diverse. And we're going to tap into that in a minute. But as I was doing my research on you, I came across something that really piqued my curiosity. And you've worked with lots of different companies. You've worked with the New York Times. But one company that really jumped off the page to me was the Animal Planet TV Network. And that's a really interesting organization to start with. So I guess the question I want to ask you straight up is, are you a cat person or a dog person?
I'm a dog person. Okay. I'm a dog person for sure.
So what is it about dogs? Why not cats? Why dogs? What is it about dogs that you love?
I grew up with dogs, but for the most part, if you could boil it just down to one thing, it's that when I walk in the door at the end of the day, I want to be greeted with enthusiasm. And that is dog all the way.
That is totally dog all the way. I've got a small confession to make. I have a dog and I love my dog, but I'm a cat person. And have you ever heard the expression that dogs have owners and cats have staff?
Yes.
That's why I like, I don't know what it is. I love their arrogance. I love their superiority complex. But anyway, I digress. Ali, you've done a lot of work over the years in business. You've got an MBA from the Wharton School. You've spent 20 years refining your process around customer experience. and I love in your spare time, you're a professor of entrepreneurship at Purdue University. So lots of stuff going on there. Why did you want to work around customer retention and hanging on to your customers and keeping your customers? What was it about that that really piqued your curiosity? What was it that led you to that work?
I came into this work by accident when I was working at the New York Times Company. I got put on a project. I was working in the corporate strategy group, which kind of worked as an internal consulting division for the New York Times Company. And they were at a point in their evolution where if newspaper subscriber went from a paper subscriber to a digital subscriber, they went from being profitable to unprofitable. And the customer experience wasn't good. The call centers where people called into were not a good experience. So we had a lot of customers that were going from profitable to unprofitable. And I was called in to fix it, or at least figure it out. And to take a very, very long story and compress it down, what I found fascinating was the fact that the change to customer experience and the change to the revenue and the profitability boiled down to the activities that we did internally with our employees. We think of customer experience as being about customers, but it's really about how you manage your business. And I just found that to be fascinating and interesting. The other piece of it that I really loved was the fact that you think of these things as being rational, but they're really not. I mean, people decide to stay or go based on emotion. When business owners think about what to do, they often think about the nuts and bolts and skip over the emotion part. And it's really how people feel that determines whether or not they decide to stay or decide to go.
Wow. I feel like I've met my soul sister in another country, because this is exactly the sort of work I'm very passionate about as well. When we were talking a little off air, I mentioned to you that if I had a dollar for every time someone had said to me, if I could just have more new customers, more new patients, and we both had a simultaneous eye roll at the same time. Is that something that you hear in other industries as well, or is that just a dental thing?
Every industry, they all think it's about lead gen and sales. And when somebody's in the sales process, it's all champagne and caviar. And then you get in the door and it's bread and water. People spend their time, energy, and effort getting the customers, and they just don't spend the effort on keeping them. And every single piece of research shows that your value is in keeping customers, extending the lifetime value of them, treating them well, getting referrals, all of these things. It doesn't make sense, but it does make sense, because it is so much easier to think about sales, because that's a process that is kind of encapsulated, right? You know what to do. I'm going to buy more ads. I'm going to get that list. I'm going to talk to that person. And customer experience and customer retention are the messy reality of your business. And so it's kind of sexier and it's more fun to stay in sales land, but that's not where the rubber meets the road.
You're absolutely right. In sales land, as you described, there's that adrenaline rush as well of look at all this stuff. And can I use a really bad metaphor? And I hope this doesn't come across as sounding a little odd, but to me, sales land is a bit like courting or dating. And retention is a bit like the marriage that comes after the wedding.
That's a totally great metaphor. I mean, that's not weird at all to me. The sales is about the wedding ceremony, right? With the party, hors d'oeuvres, and you know, you get the little pigs in the blanket and all that stuff. At the marriage, like, that's where it gets real.
It's totally. And it's also where people can get a little bit bored, because there's the excitement of the party, the hors d'oeuvres and all the rest of it. And so I understand why people are naturally seduced by more leads, more sales, more this. But as you say, the research, it's indisputable. It's there. The real return comes from retention. So can I ask you, why then do people neglect retention so much?
Part of it is for all the reasons that we just said. And the other piece is that it seems easier. They know what to do on sales more than they know what to do on customer retention. customer experience in a lot of ways, even though it has always been a part of business, has only started to become a real area of focus in itself relatively recently, which also seems weird, but it's true. So the things that were happening by accident in businesses are now becoming codified in much greater ways. So business owners are saying, okay, well, now I need a process for that. And it used to just be that whatever, the office manager just kind of knew the customers and it happened organically. But as businesses grow, and especially as people become busier, you can't just rely on the person in the front office to have a great sparkling personality and happen to remember that Marge, who's coming in at 9, has two kids that are named Wilbur and Sally. You have to have processes behind a good memory and a sparkling wit. So that's really where the industry has evolved into, is how do you create these processes? And it's not about being complicated. It's just about being consistent.
Totally. I guess what I'm hearing you say is you want to be able to systemize and humanize that experience. You know, we've got the process running in the background and someone's personality layered over the top of that. So the sparkling person who's there, that's great, but we're not relying on that. If whoever is in that front office does leave, the process remains. I wanted to ask you a little bit about something you mentioned earlier that it was about the emotion. People stay for the emotion. And I happen to have an intellectual crush, and I'm just phrasing this very carefully, lest it sound, again, I'm coming up with all sorts of weirdness today. I'm a real fan of the work of Brené Brown, is what I'm trying to say, and the work that she's done around connection and the work where she says connection is what gives meaning and purpose to our lives. In dentistry, a lot of people come into the dental practice fearful, nervous. If I had a dollar for every time someone said, no offense, doc, but I don't want to be here. I wanted to ask you about customer retention and connection, particularly that emotional piece in that kind of environment compared to an environment, say, like a hotel or some other where we might think of a customer experience, Disneyland or a hotel system, or whatever, because there's a lot of similarity and yet there's nuance and subtlety and difference around that as well. So I wanted to ask you if you had any thoughts about retention in that kind of environment.
Sure. So I think about it in two ways. I call it the heart and the smart. The heart is the emotional connection, the way that people feel in the business. Mm-hmm. When you think about how do you tap into that heart piece in a dentistry practice, it does have everything to do with being greeted at a fine hotel, right? You are entering into a business and you are going to be greeted by someone, and how that feels to a customer who walks in the door is going to have an impact on how they feel about their experience. I went to a dentist once and it was in the dingy basement of an old building where you practically expected some little critter to come running out of a corner. The lighting was terrible and sort of that yellowy greeny color that everyone looks so great in. The receptionist was behind a sliding piece of glass and seemed incredibly disinterested in her job. And I remember sitting in that waiting room thinking, I don't want to see the guy behind that door. I don't want to see the guy who thinks that this is a good way to start the relationship. And I'm better than this. So I stopped going and I found a dentist. His reception area, you walked in, it was brightly lit. There was a table in the middle of the room that always had a big bouquet of, it wasn't even flowers, it was like dried leaves and gesturing, but that's not going to be very helpful to your listeners. But, you know, wheat shafts and all that stuff. And, yep. But it looked very attractive. The receptionist, I would come in and Sandra, I mean, I know her name, right? Sandra would always say, Allie, it is so great to see you. Of course, she had a cheat sheet. She knew that the customer named Allie was coming in. And so it's not like she actually even had to remember me, but she always seemed genuinely enthusiastic to see me. Two exact same situations, patient coming in to see dentist, but two fundamentally different experiences. That's the heart of it, but it's also alluding to the smart of it, right? Because the difference between me going to dingy basement guy and sign your name on the paper and I'm not going to have a human interaction with you, that's a choice in terms of how they ran their business. Mm-hmm. But when I walked in and Sandra saw me, like she knew that I was coming. I had gotten a bunch of notifications reminding me of my appointment. I had gotten an email, I had gotten a text. So they were using technology, the smart of business, mm-hmm. to reinforce the relationship as well. How you manage the heart and smart of that customer experience all factor into how the customer feels.
I really love the concept of heart and smart. I think that's a really, really lovely way of framing it, because I think customer retention, patient experience, all of those things are so intertwined with that heart piece, but again, having the system behind it. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the systemization of the experience of the retention process, because we spoke earlier about making sure we have adequate systems or enough systems without perhaps overdoing it. Where is that boundary between appropriate level of systemization and not having it feel totally automated and mechanical? This is a process. Where is that boundary? Where does that lie?
Yeah. What we have these days is all of this great technology, and yep. it can be used for the forces of good. But we also have the ability to tailor it to mm-hmm. our businesses and our needs. And it's something that I find that a lot of businesses overlook. You go onto a website, you open up the chat bot, and it says, "How can I help you?" And that's a choice. They could have customized it. They could have had the chatbot say, "How's it going?" or "How you doing?" or anything. And yo, sucker, like it doesn't matter. They could have said whatever they wanted it to say, but they choose the generic. Every time there's a touch point, you make a choice about how you want to engage with your customer. So one of the ways that you can avoid that bot-like feeling is by having clarity about the personality of your business. Mm. That may be driven by the personality of the dentist, but it doesn't have to be. At least it's a choice. And even not making a choice is a choice. And so by being intentional about how you come across, it's going to, or it has the potential to really change the way that a customer receives it and engages with it.
Fantastic. You just spoke about the personality of business and you spoke about the touch points, and there's quite a few threads I'd like to just pick up and run with there. This is fun for me because you've given me so many segues into a great conversation. So it's a bit like choose your own adventure. I'll come back to the personality in a moment, and because I think that's really important, but I do want to just talk about touch points. Touch points are, of course, moments of interaction the patient in this case would have with your business. Of course, they don't always have to be physically in the business to experience your business. So the way I look at touch points is, and again, this is a little arbitrary, but we look at those touch points that occur before the appointment, during the appointment, after the appointment. If you were thinking about touch points for a small business or a general business of similar enough to a dental practice, are all touch points created equally, or do you think there are a couple of major ones that we just need to nail?
The way that customers are greeted when they walk in the door is a major touch point.
Yeah.
If you're going to get one thing right, get that right.
Yeah, totally.
The others are important in that, and we talked about this a little bit beforehand. So if you think about the basic revenue structure of a dental practice, mm-hmm. you want a customer or a patient to come every 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I presume that's true in Australia as well.
Yeah, pretty much.
Teeth aren't different there.
No, it translates very well.
So that's your goal, is have the patient show up every 6 months. But it's easy, especially if you don't have that relationship or if you don't have those touch points nailed down, for that every 6 month appointment to slide to 7, 8, 9 months. The patient probably still thinks that they're doing a good job coming in for regular dental checkups. Mm-hmm. But at the end of 2 years, if you've had a patient slip from 6 months to 9 months, that's 3 visits in 2 years instead of 4 visits in 2 years. And that's a 25% difference in revenue. Mm-hmm. And you play that out over time, and that's a huge difference in the customer's lifetime value. So those touch points outside the office are very important. I would say that the pre is probably more important than the post in mm-hmm. dental work. Although if you've had a patient that has something more than a regular checkup, that post appointment check-in to see if they're doing okay probably means a lot and probably puts you ahead of most of the other dentists in town that aren't taking the time and making the effort to check in with their patients. So I would say if I had to rank them in order, how you greet them mm-hmm. is the most important thing. How you make sure they come in the door so that they are being reminded and reinforced that they need to schedule or reschedule their appointment, and then that post-appointment check-in.
Perfect. Ellie, one of the things that when I think about touch points is mentally think about all those different experiences a patient might have when they interact with our business. Let's just say I choose one particular touch point and then I'm thinking about what do I want to have happen at this touch point? You design customer experience. This is your world. You're really good at this. This is your baby. When you're thinking about creating an experience with intention and by design rather than just letting it evolve by default, what are the things that you're thinking about as you're designing the experience at any given touch point?
So in my company, Alignment Growth Strategies, we start with the heart. We start by being very intentional about how you want your business to be received by the customer. Mm-hmm. And we make that something that is unique to your business and very sticky so that everybody inside your company understands what they're aiming for. We literally call it the bullseye because we want everybody to aim for it. Then we look at what is building and blocking loyalty in the company? So we tear it all apart and we talk to happy customers and unhappy customers. And we look at what the process is today and figure out well, where are the opportunities to do better? Where are the gaps? Where are the opportunities? Then we map it out and literally end by creating playbooks so that every single person in the company knows their role in the customer experience. And it can be something as simple as a checklist so that every, you know, for the front office receptionist, so that every customer gets those same 6 touch points from stop what you're doing, look them in the eye and smile. Mm. Those may be things that people need to be reminded of. Then it goes into a lot more detail about delivering the actual service. Everything from how do you welcome them and all the way through how do you celebrate the fact that they've been a customer and how do you celebrate inside your business to make sure that your staff feels engaged too. Because in dental practices especially, the dentists are so busy all the time and they're seeing patients during the day and then they've got paperwork and all of the business of business at night, it's probably really hard to find time to reinforce all of these things that you might want them to do. And so the more you can give people a system and a process so that they can be successful, that will make a difference. It's just saying, hey, be more personable. That's something that's going to happen and then it's going to dissipate. It's going to go off into the ether. And this is what I see in a lot of small businesses across a lot of different industries. Owners want to be able to say something once and have their employees just get it. And it's just not the way it works.
No, it's definitely not the way it works. Unfortunately, it'd be nice if it did, but it just doesn't work that way. You've spoken about a lot of things that are, I think, are really, really important for our listeners to understand. And we've spoken about at a given touch point, what is it we want that patient to feel or to engage with or to really understand about the business and how we interact with them? Obviously, from there, you've spoken about how we create a checklist or a system around that and a process around that. And we've spoken about the fact that you can't just deliver that to the team members once and hope it sticks. So do you have any advice for business owners, practice owners to help make it stick? Because you're absolutely spot on. Dentists are quite busy. They're spending their day treating patients. They're listening to the phone calls or the things that are happening, one ear on what's happening in the surgery, one ear what's happening at the front office. And sometimes what they're hearing in the front office is great. And other times they might be listening and going, oh my goodness, this is not what we spoke about. This is not what we rehearsed. This is not what we've trained, etc. So in your experience, how do you make these things stick?
So by giving people easy, repeatable processes, a lot of times when companies decide that they're going to try and focus on retention, they overdo it. They come up with processes and technologies and all of these things that are overkill. And they're going so much for perfection that their initiatives kind of get crushed by their own weight. And a lot of times it's not about being fancy. It's just about being consistent. So finding something that you want to work on and identifying it, coming up with that clear process for it, and just doing that one thing for a while, and then picking the next thing, but only after that first thing has become part of the normal routine. So don't try and do too much, and don't try and make it too fancy.
I really appreciate you saying that, because we're actually running a workshop in a couple of weeks where we're actually going to be mapping touch points and doing all those sorts of things. And the temptation is for everyone to slice their patient experience into such minute micro touch point upon micro touch point upon micro, and that you get this really complicated, heavy experience to build. And I don't know what it's like in the United States, but here I always say that I'm really grateful for our banks and for our phone companies, because they set the standards so low that our patients are trained to expect a fairly ordinary and basic, even terrible customer service experience, that it doesn't make it too hard to exceed that, right? And so what I appreciate you saying is just pick one thing and be really good at that. Is that something that resonates with you over there as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have the healthcare industry, which is our nemesis over here. And so that's our cross to bear. But banks and the cable company for sure are always the ones that are making people crazy. So it is true. The bar is really low, but that's why what you do, anything you do, is going to stand out and it's going to keep people. And I would say that most people would be very happy to find a dentist that they like and want to stay with. I mean, if you make people's lives easier with the technology that you all have these days, I can go to the dentist and schedule my next appointment while I'm still there. I'm going to get a reminder. I'm going to get hey, if you need to reschedule, just click this button and I can reschedule really easily. So in my technological world, it's not fancy tech, but it's tech that works. So I moved to a new town about 4 years ago and I got a referral to a dentist who's fine, just fine, but inconveniently located to where I live. And I've been going there for 4 years. And every time I go, I think, God, this is a pain in the neck. I'm not going to drive here next time. And then lo and behold, at the end of the appointment, they say, well, let's schedule you for next time. And I never feel like saying, no way, Jose, I'm not coming back again, because they're very nice people.
Yeah.
And so I schedule the appointment and I still haven't gotten out of there. Still going back to the dentist that I'm driving 45 minutes to four years later.
There you go. And in another 4 years, we'll check in and see if you're still there.
I swear this is it. This is my last time.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see about that. Because if that practice is thinking smartly, and they should be, it's always about rebooking that next appointment, always giving you a reason to return, always making sure that there is value created for you to return rather than just shoving you out the door, basically.
Well, I'll give you a really interesting example from this practice. So as I said, I'm not that dedicated to this dentist, but I do like the guy and he's retiring. They have done more or less nothing to introduce me to the person who's going to be taking the practice over. So my husband and I were actually just talking about this the other day. We are actually going to be done. Like, we're not going back, because now we don't feel any relationship to the practice because they haven't made any effort. And literally, if they had just done something as small as walk the dude in and have him shake my hand before I left at my last appointment, I might have felt differently. That's all it can take.
It's so true, isn't it? I'm so glad you brought that up. Years ago, I had a friend of mine who's a lawyer, and they had $1 million contract between their law firm and, I don't know what you'd call it in the United States, but over here it's a local council, municipality, perhaps over there. They had this $1 million contract. They had one person in the law firm talking to one person in the council or municipality. And I'm thinking, what a dangerous relationship that is, because if either one of those were to leave, as you've just highlighted, that whole relationship, that business relationship breaks down. So what I'm hearing you say is one of the strategies around retention, would be to have more of the people in the practice know you, Ali, whether it's the hygienist, whether it's the other dentist, whether it's the reception staff, it's all of those people knowing you, not just having this one relationship with the dentist itself. Is that something that would resonate?
Absolutely. So in my practice in DC, my old town where Sandra was the receptionist, Maureen was my hygienist. And yeah. I think that they did a really great job of putting personal notes into whatever customer database they had, because I would see Maureen and then I'd come back 6 months later and she'd say, oh, so you were about to go on a vacation the last time I saw you. And she made it sound so natural, like she had been sitting there for 6 months just waiting for me to come back so she could ask me about my trip to wherever. And I know that it's in the notes in the database. I'm not confused, but I don't care. I'm still charmed by the fact that she has asked me about my vacation. It's so simple and so brilliant.
And it doesn't take much effort. It doesn't take much effort at all. So, Ali, I want to just talk about what happens when we execute a retention strategy well. Obviously, we're going to see an increase in lifetime value. You've already spoken about that. Can you talk to the point, if you think it's appropriate, about what happens with not just the returning visit and the same spend? My experience is that with dentistry, people don't always accept treatment first off, because they want to get to know you. Who's this person that's going to be getting inside my mouth and doing this stuff? And so do you have any views about the spend increasing over time, or whether it's stable? How do you see that?
When people trust you as an advisor, they're going to be much more likely to accept your advice. You're not just a medical practitioner. You really are a trusted advisor. And these days, you know, dentistry is as much about cosmetics as it is about fixing cavities and the medical side of it. Mm. What I see is that there are more and more people that are doing things like Invisalign and whitening and all of these things that they could, there's stuff that you could get on Amazon. Even with those teeth straighteners, there's things that you can just buy yourself. But if you are a trusted advisor, then your patients are going to be much more inclined to listen to you. And there's probably some really good reasons why somebody should buy an Invisalign type system from their dentist and not from the internet. Yeah. But literally this morning, and this has actually nothing to do with the fact that I was coming on this podcast, literally this morning, I've been grinding my teeth at night and I just bought a night guard thing from Amazon. But I would have bought it from my dentist if I had felt like I was connected to my dentist in any way. So he's kind of lost me, but he lost that revenue too. That would have been an upsell of whatever, however much it would have been for him. And it may or may not have been more expensive or less expensive for me to get it from the dentist. He mentioned it last time, but I was like, oh, okay. But if I had been more engaged by him and the practice, then I probably would have just gotten it there because I trusted him and the experience.
And I don't know what the price point is on Amazon. Obviously, Amazon's pretty known for trying to make things accessible and affordable. But if you were to have a custom-made one that was designed just for you, as recommended by your trusted advisor, you'd probably pay a more premium price for that if you had that relationship. Is that fair?
Absolutely fair. And there are really good reasons why you should want to have a custom mouth guard. I feel like now I'm just having like shrink talk about my dental.
lie back on the couch. Tell us your deepest, darkest secrets. Exactly.
So I did have Invisalign and I was wearing the retainer and it was so tight that I had a crown and it popped off. Yep. And yep. So because it was with a dentist, I could just go to the dentist and he took care of it. And I felt really great about that whole thing. Yep. But now that I've gotten this, now I'm regretting this purchase, man. So returning that. And so, yeah, now that I've got this cheapo Amazon mouth guard, I mean, first of all, who knows what it's made out of? It's probably made God knows where out of God knows what. That's revenue that should have come from my dentist.
Yeah, I'm doing my very best to get some revenue into your dentist practice right now. Just so you don't leave him, right? Oh, dear, oh dear, that's really funny. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about as we go through this process as well is measuring lifetime customer value. It can be quite hard to measure because if you've got a dental patient who might be with you 10 years, 12 years, 20 years, it's really hard to measure that sometimes. And it's also hard to understand what's happening with their health and what changes. Do you have any thoughts about lifetime value versus a 3-year value or a 5-year value? Is there any benefit to putting some parameters around a time frame, or do you just stick to lifetime value?
Interesting. I mean, I would think that it's very industry dependent. And I would think that in dentistry, people do stay for a long period of time. I would think that the lifetime value for a dental patient would be high for exactly the reasons that we've been talking about. There's a low incentive to move. There's not a huge barrier to moving, but it's just not on the top of people's to-do list. So if they're reasonably happy, then they're probably going to stay. And the only reason I left my dentist is because I moved 300 miles away. That was too far. That was too far to drive. Sure. And so I would probably want to take a stab at something that's more like a lifetime value or maybe like a 10-year value in dentistry, because I would think that that would merit that lifespan. But in something like technology, where there's so much change, and I do a lot of work in the tech industry, then 10 years is the lifetime of the company. So it's a lot harder to sort of look at it from that perspective.
Got it. So one of the things, again, Elliot, I know this is very apparent and obvious to you, but for those people that still go and do the client attraction, patient attraction through running more ads or whatever, knowing that lifetime value or that 10-year value or whatever it is, that's really important metric to know. And yet most people don't know it. So is it simply a case of going every 6 months, they're coming in, that's 20 visits by X number of dollars plus an allowance for a few cavities to be filled here and there, maybe a crown or two along the way? Is that basically what you're mapping out in terms of lifetime value?
Yeah. The point of doing the customer lifetime value exercise is not to be perfect, but to have an understanding of it. And a lot of times what I'll walk people through is, okay, what's the difference between an average customer and a loyal customer? If somebody comes and they're not that satisfied and they leave, how much have you spent to get them? What's the value of that person who's sort of churned out versus if you can do a couple things and convert them into somebody who becomes loyal, then what's that value? And I was just talking to somebody the other day, their customers are only spending about $75 with them. The difference between somebody who is average, so an average customer has had a value of about a couple hundred dollars, but if they got somebody to stick around and then they also did things like were able to solicit positive word of mouth, and so they were expanding the real value of this lifetime by bringing new customers in. Also, all of a sudden, it was up to like $15,000.
Yeah,
and so a huge difference.
And yet people don't pay attention to it.
I know. It's fascinating. I do think it's changing. And customers demand more. What's happening more and more right now is that this idea of, oh, I get treated differently in this kind of business versus that kind of business is going out the window. Now it's just, how am I being treated? And customers are sort of picking the best of one industry and the best of another industry and saying, I want that. So that industry that responds to my tweet in 15 minutes or 2 minutes inside of an hour, I expect that from every business that I deal with. The call center experience from the best companies, I expect that from every company. So these lines are starting to get blurred. And honestly, businesses ignore it at their peril. And it doesn't matter that you're a small business owner. Customers expect better treatment.
Really interesting, Ali. I am part of numerous Facebook groups, probably like you as well. And we kind of watch the conversations that go on. And a common conversation, and again, this is something I scratch my head about, but nonetheless, it does come up, is there's a lot of people, not a lot, there's a handful of people who will say, I'm so good at attracting new leads, new customers, new whatever, that I don't even have time to see my returning patients. And I get so much treatment accepted up front that I feel like I'm getting more value by just focusing on new patients rather than making time and space for my returning patients. Now, I'll give you my thoughts around that, and I'd love to get your thoughts around that as well. My first thought is that may well be the case, but you may not be so adept at creating leads and sales into the future as well, so you're not future-proofing your business. The second point around that is the real problem is a capacity problem, not a let's solve the real problem. And my third thought around that is perhaps, you know, they're not working hard enough to get sales out of the returning patients where the real value can lie, because people like to buy from those who they know, like, and trust, and that takes time. But I wanted to put that scenario to you because, again, I'm sure this is not a unique thing in dentistry. I'm sure you've heard this 100 times before in other industries as well. But could you just speak to that? Because I know there'll be someone listening to this podcast. Yeah, retention's mentioned, I get it. But, you know, I'm really good at attracting new business, so I'm going to focus just on that.
There are always going to be people that feel that way. Yep. And I'm not interested in trying to change their mind if they're really going to double down on that, because good luck to them. And I mean that sincerely, that I don't mean that to come out flippant. Mm-hmm. But I do think that for all of the reasons that you mentioned, that they might want to reevaluate whether or not that's really the best use of their time, energy, and effort, because there's also a real opportunity cost that they're missing. All of that time that they're having to spend generating new leads could be spent growing other aspects of the business if they didn't have to spend that time generating new leads. Because if you think about the reality of if you have somebody come in and then go out, one customer come in the door and then one customer goes out the door, you have zero customers. And so, but if you have one customer in the door and they stay and then you get another customer, then you have two customers. And if you start playing with this sort of compounding effect, and I won't geek out too much about it, although I can.
You geek out. I love it.
No, I'll spare you guys the math. But if you start playing with this compounding effect, then you have to work harder and harder and harder just to stay where you are, let alone grow. Mm. And so here, I'll give you a real short and sweet geeky response here. So let's say you have 50 customers, you get 50 customers a month, yep. And you have 100% retention. Yep. So in month one, you have 50 customers, in month two, you have 100. And by the end of month 12, you have 600 customers.
Yep.
And
yep.
You have an 83% retention rate. I know the number off the top of my head because I just ran these numbers for somebody. 83% retention rate, which doesn't sound terrible, right? But at the end of 12 months with an 83% retention rate, you end up with like 263 customers versus 600.
Yeah, wow.
It's a pretty shocking difference.
Yeah, that is huge. We did an exercise actually around this a little while ago. It was very low tech. So just forgive the low tech exercise here. But we did this exercise really because I see retention as a force multiplier. And what we did is we also thought, okay, if we retain each patient and we ask them to send two people to us, basically we generate two referrals. Basically, what we did is we ran this exercise. We had a couple hundred people in the room, I think. And we had one person in the very back corner and he, or she, I can't remember if it was a he or she, touched two people on the shoulder, basically, bang. And those people in turn had to touch two. And what we were measuring was just how quickly that multiplied as well. So the compounding effect can work both ways. You can compound up or you can compound down. And what you've shown is the effect of churn and how it can devastate a business. But equally, if they get this right and they get these referrals off the back end, it can go the other way really well for them too, correct?
Absolutely. And that's where the magic happens. When you start doing these things, coming back around to where we started, when you start to build the relationships and make people feel seen, heard, and valued in your business so that they want to come back, but they also want to tell other people about their positive experience, then you just sit there and let the phone ring. And that frees you up to reinforce all of the positive ways that you want your staff to engage so that people feel seen, heard, and valued. And you now are in this just growth mode instead of being on the hamster wheel, running and running and running just to stay in place.
Totally. Ali, you've been really, really generous with your time tonight for you, today for us. And as I said at the top of the hour, I felt like I've met my kindred spirit when it comes to this topic. And there's so many things that we could talk about. I know you've got a lot of wisdom, a lot of stuff you can share. For those people interested, your book is called Keep Your Customers. I love your website, by the way, because it's got mint in there, which is very dental. I'm just going to say Align Mint. forgrowth.com. Got a bit of a dental flavor there. So if people want to get hold of your book, is the best place to get that on Amazon, or is there some other place that we should go to get hold of that book?
Well, since I am all about being customer friendly, do whatever is easiest for you. And generally that means Amazon. So yeah, that is perfectly fine.
Perfect. Okay. And if we were to direct people to your website, is there anything that we'd want them to read or to really examine on your website that's going to have some resources there that people can read up on and just get some bobs?
When people buy the book, they can get access to some secret resources. And so there's some goodies in there. But the blog is loaded with good stuff. And that's on the alignmentforgrowth.com website.
Thank you so much. I love the dental mintiness in that. I read that as well and went, look, there we go. This is just meant to be. This is going to be a great conversation. And it has been. So thank you. Ali, what I would like to just finish with is, if we could have the gospel according to Ali when it comes to, you know, keeping your customers, or we could have a billboard with, you know, two or three key points on it, what would be two or three takeaways you'd want to leave the audience with?
So the first one we talked about already, which is think about the heart and the smart of your business.
Yeah.
How do you make people feel seen, heard, and valued on the one hand? And how do you create the clear, consistent, measurable processes that businesses need in order to grow on the other? The other would be that as you are putting these things into place, don't make it too complicated. Start simple and grow from success. And the third thing I will say, especially to the business owners who are listening, is that as you are engaging in this process of improving the customer experience, you will need to tell your team what to do more times than you can imagine would possibly be required to embed this information into your team. And you just can't repeat it often enough and reinforce it often enough. And so many of these initiatives become these sort of exercises in flavor of the month frustration. It's because they don't get the repetition that they deserve. And they really need that repetition in order for the team to understand exactly what to do to be successful and also know that you mean business. So just repetition, repetition, repetition.
Wow. There is some absolute pearls of wisdom right there, ladies and gents. And Ali, once again, thank you so much for taking the time this evening, your time today for us. It's always a pleasure to talk around this topic, and you've got so much to share on this. Ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do get a copy of the book. Please do head across to Ali's website, because I've noodled around on the blog and other things there, and there's a lot of good stuff there. And again, it'll really get you on the path to learning more about this topic. So Ali, once again, thank you so much. You're an absolute gem, and really appreciate your work. It's wonderful.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. It's been a ton of fun.
Cool. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.